Well, we know what it's like to feel worried and helpless about the state of our world.
But we're finding comfort and inspiration from people tackling winner-take-all economics and other root causes of climate change, inequity, and global unrest.
Join us on the road from wasteland to wonderland. This is Pot of Gold.
Please keep in mind that these recordings may not be as high quality as they usually are because we're doing them in a time of social distancing.
Is changing our diet the key to healing our planet?
For Krishna McKenzie, our connection with nature is all about food. Krishna runs a farm in Auroville, an experimental township in India. Auroville was founded by Mira Alfasa, a French woman who the residents of Auroville simply call Mother.
Let's listen in as Krishna describes his mission.
So, thank you for inviting me here. I'm Krishna McKenzie. I'm from England, and I've been living the last 27 years in the international township of Auroville, which is next to Pondicherry in South India. We're on the border of Pondicherry in Tamil Nadu. I've come here, as I say, 27 years ago, and I started farming straight away, inspired by Masanobu Fukuoka, who is, I consider to be my sort of guru, if you like. And he was really exploring a non-interventional farming, a farming that negates all the industrialization that has burdened our world and has eroded our nutritional, cultural identity and, you know, our ecology, and has contributed massively to global warming, etc. So I started Solitude Farm in January 96, and since then I've been walking this road back to nature, if you like, exploring how to value local foods. I would say that's really the crux of it. So we've been doing that through a lot of education. And yeah, that's all that's going on here.
Could you describe the community a little bit?
So Auroville is 50 plus years now old. And it's a very diverse community. It's, you know, it's international as it gets. And we're about, I think it must be near to 3,000 residents. And then there's a lot of guests, a lot of people coming to just be tourists or volunteers or visiting friends or family. And then we have another community, which comprises of the villagers around Auroville. So a lot of those villagers are working in Auroville, helping with, you know, all sorts of jobs, from menial work, like, I know, helping in kitchens and gardens, and or to, I don't know, maybe accounting and working in software and all sorts of things like that. The intention of Auroville is very, very beautiful. You know, it's that of human unity and people living together. And of course, we're just all people like anyone else. So you've got all the normal problems that you face here, that you face anywhere else. All sorts of different difficulties that people face. But there is a space in Auroville. There is the charter that the mother had written, that Auroville belongs to nobody in particular, but to humanity as a whole, and it's a place of non-ending education. And I recognize in that charter an intention that really has a weight, and you feel like that in Auroville. There's so many different things going on, from natural dying of you know, clothes dying, and healing, and compressed mud bricks, and alternative architecture, and permaculture, and all sorts of interesting things going on, that you see those things are possible because we have this sort of, there's a lot of freedom here. I mean, that's also to do with it being in India, but there is a lot of freedom to explore. It's changing people's food habits, changing people's conditioning, because the problem starts from small age, where we're conditioned to become the best in the class and to get the highest points and you know, to get the iPad and the holiday in the wherever you were, Thailand, and the new pair of Nike, that individual success, which is very related to monetary gain, is where it sort of all starts. And that divorces us from more simple values, like to know that this particular leaf is good to eat, and for this other root calms your stomach. And you know, that sort of, that relationship with Mother Nature is not valued. So I think that changing people's values takes a lot of time, but it's definitely, this has been very helpful in the last couple of years. There's been a lot of interest within Oroville as well in exploring the fact that, hang on, local foods, they grow easily, they grow with less water, they grow, you know, you don't need any expertise to grow them, they have no carbon footprint, they have a higher medicinal and nutritional value, and you know, they're cheaper, there's definitely an economic value in that. And yet we're buying olive oil and pasta and God knows what else, and wheat that doesn't grow here, and it comes from very far away and has thus a very high ecological impact, not to mention the detriment to our health, which is synonymous with the health of the planet. So really the work that we're doing is trying to make people wake up to the fact that there is another option, and that option can only be understood when we start to explore our relationship with Mother Nature, which is very much reflected in an understanding of where our food comes from.
How many farms are in Oroville, or can Oroville basically, and you just said some food is coming in, some food is imported?
No, there are, I don't know how many farms are exactly, there must be, I don't know, 15, 16 farms or something. Oroville grows actually less than, I think it's 10 or 15% than its food, of its food. And I would say the reason for that is all what I've just mentioned. We're heavily conditioned to eat certain foods. If you look at this land, the people of this land, traditionally, they ate yams, they ate plantain, they ate banana stem, banana flowers, loads of types of spinach, ladies' fingers, cluster beans, various dals, oil seeds, and a lot of millets. And nowadays, people eat potatoes, carrots, you know, as I say, beetroot and broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and white rice and olive oil and pasta and wheat, and none of these things grow here. This is the problem that we're facing. So that's, I would say, why that we don't grow enough of our own food, is that actually people are very conditioned to eat other foods. That's why they're the focus of, this as a focus is not, there's not enough of an intention, I think, collectively. And I wouldn't single Oroville out at all by any means. I think it's global, you know, it's everyone is, we're all in the same boat. There's not an intention to make an understanding of where our food comes from, and eating local food as an absolute priority for social change in the world.
Do you think it's also kind of the corporations that are driven to sell the food for profit?
No, but the corporations aren't separate from us. You know, we are the world, as Jay Krishnamurti said, you know. It's all a reflection of our conditioning, definitely. It's all to do with, it's the whole system of, as I say, from the beginning, you're conditioned to be better than the next person. It's looking at individual well-being rather than collective well-being. It's looking at my well-being rather than a community. And it's this sort of Descartesian sort of paradigm where we sort of separate everything into little boxes, but actually the foundation of all well-being lies in the soil. I know your podcast, you know, focuses a lot on economy and alternative economies and stuff. Well, the real foundation of all wealth is our soil on this planet, because from a healthy soil come healthy plants, come healthy people, comes a healthy society with the potential of a sort of an inner inquiry, so that means some sort of wisdom. And we don't have that as our intention. Our intention is always, what can we get more for ourselves on an individual level? And there lies our problem. Now I'm working, as I mentioned to you before, I'm working with this lady, Nina Sengupta. And this morning I was doing a YouTube video with her, and I constantly learn new things with her, because our farm is really dedicated to natural farming. So it's basically a food forest. We have over 150 different edible plants growing throughout the year, from sesame to 3-meter-high Assamese giant okra to papayas and wild sarsaparilla. So many plants are there. And she's showing me all these wild edible weeds and saying, oh, did you try the wild passion fruit leaf? And have you tried this Brazilian joy weed, which is a relative of the amaranth family? Amaranthus. And then she's showing this leaf and that leaf and this one and that, and I'm like, wow. And now we've started to collect all these weeds, and we start to give them as a wild weed, a wild spinach kit and a wild leaf salad kit in our CSA basket service, which is really inspiring. And the people are telling me, wow, we made a spinach dish with those spinaches. What were they? They were so amazing. And people are waking up to the value of local weeds. And it sounds like nothing, because in our mind, we'll think weeds is nothing. But when you start to see, but hang on, they're growing in so prolific way, you know, they're abundant. And they're tasty, and they're high in nutrition. Why aren't they part of our lives? Well, they're not part of our lives because we're more focused on getting a bachelor's, a master's degree in business administration and buying a new car than we are on understanding our cultural nutritional heritage. So this is really the for me at the moment, it's the ultimate what I'm working on. Since the lockdown, I'm doing. The basket service actually went from about 21 subscribers to like 54 subscribers, and this appreciation of these local foods increased enormously. And along with that, I've been running a people's food movement since 2014, and it was a bit dormant for a couple of years, and with the lockdown it really picked up. Now we have 20 communities in Oroville engaged with us on various levels in starting their own gardens, and I'm often going to these gardens and helping people start. So we're doing, you know, regular stuff like lines of radish and lines of, you know, some amaranth and corn, etc. But we're also going in there and planting these wild spinaches and showing people the value of having these spinaches in their gardens. And I think that's it sounds very naive, but it's of the utmost significance in my eyes.
Sounds fantastic, Krishna. I love the idea of having wild spinach in my garden. you actually pointed out quite rightly that we are very interested in the economy, but it is, as you said, the respect to earth, right, where it all starts. And that is so much connected to, well, not connected to our current prevailing monetary system. But maybe you could talk a little bit now about Oroville and the kind of special position Oroville has within when it comes to money. Like you, I think Oroville is still running on basic income, isn't it?
I would say there are very sincere efforts to explore economy on a different level. Yeah, there's a very basic income going on here, and there's a central fund which tries to meet people involved in more service-orientated sectors like education and health and farming, right, to help provide more of their basic needs.
Yeah,
but the mother she said, you know, that Oroville should be run without money. But it's very, very, very complicated. It's very difficult. You want to change the roof of your house, and the government has a new tax and this and that. And it costs so much money. People are constantly trying to find out how to get money in Oroville. And people are even going out of the country to work and come back. I mean, not everyone, but some people, they find that necessary to do. there's definitely a need and an intense focus on trying to earn money. And I think that the shift can happen when we start to really focus on growing food and exploring our most basic needs, which is food and water and accommodation, and exploring them on a collective level and addressing them on a collective level. That means more communal kitchens, more communal working together on this subject. This subject won't pick up until it's integrated into our education system, but that doesn't mean a class from 8 to 10 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. It means that there is sort of like the kids are involved in growing food and involved in harvesting and involved in cooking more or less on a daily level, so that this becomes our key value. Otherwise I don't see how we get out of that trap, because it's a spiral that doesn't seem to end, the need to get money.
And I wonder how, if for our listeners maybe who are living in a city like New York or London, how would they become more conscious and begin to make this connection to nature that you're talking about?
I do a lot of groups, and this question often comes up, and I say it, you know, not with any arrogance or you know, not with tongue in cheek, but maybe leave the city. By next year, the statistic is there's no groundwater in 21 major metropolises in India, and yet people are still buying cars head over heels and new flat screen TVs and iPods and iPhones and this and that and this and that. This has to stop. We can't keep consuming. I mean, even any economist will be able to tell us that, you know, there's a limit to there's a cookie jar, and you have one cookie, two cookies, you have the 15th cookie, there's one left, you have that, there's no cookies left, there's no water left, there's no air to breathe. There's no food. Food is very scarce, and the quality of food is so bad now. You go in Pondicherry in the very, very old traditional market, and you go and you ask the old guy, and they're selling some grains and stuff, where does that corn come from? He tells me, Argentina. I said, where does that dal come from? Oh, that comes from Burma. You know, where does this dal come from? Oh, that comes from Africa. And you think, shit, man. 25 years ago, when I was, you know, 27 years ago, when I first came to Pondicherry, sitting in these little restaurants, you'd have a little local lunch for 10, 20 rupees, which is like nothing. And the food in every single restaurant tasted great, because still most of that food was produced locally. Now this food is coming from so far away, you feel you're really pushed to pay an head over heels amount of money and have a good meal. So you think, what's the value in all of that, you know? People think that I'm sort of preaching going back to caveman times. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that unless we honor this planet and this earth, which is the soil, which is the life in the soil, the millions of microorganisms, the molds, the bacteria, the insects, earthworms, the small animals, the mycelium, until we honor that very soil, which is the fertility of our planet, which is reflects thus in a healthy society and a culture and even a spirituality, until we value that, the rest is just very ephemeral. It's meaningless. We are just running around like blind men. Because we will only come to more and more and more problems. That's just so sure and so clear and so obvious. You don't need to have any degree to understand that. So I don't know about the cities, you know. But of course, there are millions in the city. It's easy to sit here in my little paradise and say, leave the city. But I don't know the answer for that. Maybe start growing some mint on your mantle, on your, you know, window out in the kitchen, or some pot plants, and start to try and find the local farmers who are delivering local foods to the cities. We have to find a reconnection with nature. And that reconnection with nature is our relationship with nature, which is reflected in a knowing of where our food comes from. So whatever steps we do on that way, I think, are going to help humanity.
Is there anything else, Mel, from your side?
If there's just any thought you would like to leave the listeners, summarize, or something you might have missed over or always wanted to say?
Watch my YouTube channel, Krishna McKenzie on YouTube. There's a lot of beautiful videos there that I'd love to share with you.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Krishna, thank you so much. It's been fantastic to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. And I hope we'll see you next time when we come to Oroville. I hope you will be there.
And we'll definitely visit.
You have a lovely day. You take care. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
So, Krishna McKenzie.
What an exuberant guy. I really appreciate how he could take a pea pod and make it seem like, a golden key to the universe. I really love how he speaks about food and agriculture and farming and, the connection of nature and people. He just makes you want to live with him. Like, go to Oroville.
Yeah. I remember the first time when I was in Oroville, and I remember I actually had no idea that they were doing, I knew that they had done permaculture. And when you see photos of Oroville, which basically when they were given the land, I think it was 61 or 62, so early 60s for sure, that land looked like a desert. And there are these photos, where there's this famished cow and you can see a horizon on red earth. And you come to Oroville today, and it's a forest, kind of a jungle like forest with lots of diversity and different kinds of zones they have created. And in those zones there is the farming land. And again, I didn't know about Krishna's farm. It's called Solitude Farm. But then I realized the quality of food. And it was absolutely amazing. I had a yogurt with a real fat eye. I don't know if you like it, but I was amazed that I'd seen a fat eye on a yogurt. I haven't seen that since my...
What's a fat eye on a yogurt?
It's a little bit of a fat swimming on top of the yogurt. And I hadn't had that since my childhood, I think it has disappeared in our Western dairy production.
Strained out in the factory, the yogurt factories. But, it is interesting when you speak about quality of food. And as someone who's generally not that conscious about food, I love tasty food, but haven't in my life been particularly conscious about its quality. When you speak about quality... Until the pandemic, when I started to shop only at the local farmers market, which is what he recommends we do as city folks, shop at your local farmers market. And the experience of tasting food that is locally grown, organically grown, and indigenous to the area where you live is a remarkable shift in the experience of food. I feel healthier, feel happier, I feel more connected. And I had no idea that was possible. Not a single shred of awareness about the difference food can make. And yes, it was more expensive. I would say probably 20% more expensive than the local grocery store to buy local food. But that was 20% so worth it.
Okay, we didn't talk to Krishna about costs of food very much, right? But I think this is something we could cover here a little bit. Because, yes, organic food in the United States is, I'd say, 10 to 20% more expensive. But is it really more expensive? And that's the question I would like to ask, or let's say the devil's advocate a bit here. In my opinion, it's not. It is actually the food, the cheap food is, even though it's cheap, it is way more expensive to us as a society, but also on an individual level, because it's not the food which makes you nor happy nor nutritious you in the right way. There is way too much sugar in the cheap food. It's way too processed, and it's in the end not paying off.
Mm-hmm. But those are hidden costs.
And those are hidden costs. Yes,
this
agreed.
Is one of the things that I think we're grappling with the most is we don't see those costs until it's too late. And I think one of the people like Krishna and others we've interviewed are bringing to light those costs so that we can see them before, you know, being impacted by them. You know, so maybe we are spending 20% more on our fresh, locally grown, organic, pesticide-free products, but in the long run, we'll live longer, we'll live happier, we'll pass on better genes to our kids. You know, it's just, in the end, much, much healthier.
I don't agree that we can all leave the city.
Yeah, I don't. In fact, quite the opposite. I think we are much more sustainable when we live in cities, but we need to make those cities greener.
Greener, and how do we produce good food within the city, or at least locally? So the inhabitants of bigger cities like New York, like Tokyo, and all the world cities, really, and lots of cities where we don't even know the names of, with millions of inhabitants globally, how to cover, you know, good sustainable food production. That is a real issue. And currently under this monetary system, not really possible. Then we end up by having to buy the olive oil and the food from, you know, some other continent.
Yep, coming. We need strong local economies, and that will support strong, healthy local communities.
We're an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul.
Support us by rating this episode and sharing with all your friends.
And to learn more, join us at potofgold.world.
I'm Stephanie Overbach.
And I'm Mel Wymore. Thanks for listening.